Hello. You're listening to Speaking of Urology, the official podcast for Urology Times. In keeping with our commitment to deliver urologists and allied health professionals expert clinical analysis, practice advice, and policy perspectives, each episode of Speaking of Urology will bring listeners timely and informative insights from leaders in the specialty to keep practitioners up to date while helping them practice more efficiently. I'm your host, Ben Saylor. In this episode, I spoke with Dr. Amanda North. She discusses the recent urology practice paper, The Gender Pay Gap in Urology, for which she served as a study author. North is Associate Professor of Pediatric Urology at Montefiore Medical Center.
Dr. North, could you please discuss the background of this study?
Sure. I think gender and racial issues have sort of come into the forefront in our country's dialogue in the last several years. Back in 2018, there was a male internal medicine doctor in Texas who was quoted in a medical article saying that the gender pay gap in medicine is because women just don't work as hard, they don't see as many patients, and they prioritize family and social lives or whatever over practicing medicine. And therefore, the pay gap wasn't really a pay gap, it was a work gap. And obviously, he got in a lot of trouble for saying that, but I think it emphasized the fact that there's no field in medicine where women make as much as men. And we now know that more than 50% of medical students are female. And so figuring out why there's a wage gap in medicine, and particularly in urology, if you look at the data existing, the urology pay gap has been reportedly much worse than in other specialties. And so I think we really want to understand if there is a pay gap, what was causing that pay gap, and what can we do to address it to make urology more equitable.
And so what were some of the notable findings that came out of this research then?
So we definitely did find a pay gap. So women were less likely to earn more than $350,000 a year than their male counterparts. And you have to be careful in urology because there's gender and age go hand in hand in urology. So if you look at urologists over the age of 65 who are still practicing, less than 1% are women. And obviously, the longer you're in practice, the more you're likely to make up until a certain point when you become sort of semi-retired. And even in my age group, so I'm in the over 45 to 54 age group, it's about between 10 and 12% women in my age group. So, you know, we're sort of considered the middle career practitioners, the ones who are going to be earning more. And then you look at younger urologists, it's 22% women. Now, when you're straight out of training, whether you go straight into practice from residency or you do a fellowship, you're going to start at a lower salary and work your way up. So if you don't stratify based on age, you're going to show a huge pay gap in urology because women are much better represented in the younger age groups. So we have, of course, had to adjust for that. We really wanted to focus on the work hours because of this sort of hateful comment by this guy. He was not a urologist, by the way. And we found that women don't work less than men, but that women were actually spending more time with each patient than their male counterparts, and that translated into seeing fewer patients per week. Unfortunately, our reimbursement system doesn't really account for time spent with a patient as much as it does for the level of complexity of the visit. So providing emotional support, which is something that women doctors have been noted to do maybe more than their male counterparts, that doesn't pay better. So if you're spending a lot of time reassuring a patient, you don't get paid for that time. And so, we know from other studies, there was a really interesting study out of the Journal of General Internal Medicine that showed that gendered expectations of our patients, meaning patients who were more high maintenance wanted to see women doctors because they think they listen better, was driving burnout and dissatisfaction among women practitioners. So women doctors were more likely to report seeing a higher percentage of frustrating patients. And so we're seeing that somewhat in urology, in that with women spending more time with patients, they're much more likely to see female patients who are known to be more time consuming to see. But the flip side is that women are also choosing practice settings and practice types and subspecialization areas that are also known to pay less. So women are more likely than men to be in academic medicine. Academic medicine doesn't pay as well as private practice. Women are more likely to choose female pelvic medicine and reconstruction or pediatrics compared to their male counterparts. Again, two specialties that may not pay as well as oncology or other specialties. And women are much more likely to be employed than men. We know that being an employee tends to pay less than being a practice owner. And so what we don't know from our study is, are women choosing less profitable settings because they fit what they're looking for in a practice? Or are they being forced into these situations because they're not being given alternatives? Again, we have to look at trends in medicine. So there's been a huge trend towards all of medicine being more employed rather than in private practice. And with that happening at the same time that the percentage of women in medicine, and especially in urology, started increasing, some of that is just the timing, right? Women are entering medicine at a time where we're more likely to be employees, and that pays less. So it may not be gender so much as age again. They go closely together in our field. But we don't understand yet what if this is choice and what is being sort of put upon women being forced into these circumstances that they might not have otherwise chosen.
And did any of these findings or any others that came out of this come as a surprise to you and your co-authors?
I think much of this was known. I mean, we knew, for example, that women were likely to be more likely to be in academic medicine than men. So that wasn't surprising. I think the data about women spending more time with each patient was surprising. And I didn't mention it, but women are doing fewer major inpatient operations than their male counterparts. Again, men are more likely to be oncologists than women in urology. And so obviously, if you're a urologic oncologist, you're doing more major inpatient operations than you might in other specialties. But those two things, I think the amount of time women were spending with each patient and the fact that they're not doing as many major inpatient operations was a little bit surprising to us. I think it obviously explains the pay gap to a certain extent, but it still begs the question of who's driving that decision-making. I think most women who go into urology want to be surgeons. They want to operate. So are they being restricted by which patients are choosing to go to women doctors, by the referral patterns from the primary care doctors more likely to refer a man with prostate cancer to a male urologist? That we're not able to identify from the study, but I think it makes us really think about how referral patterns and patient choice impacts what we do in our practices.
And what would the take-home message be for the practicing urologist?
So I really think that it's important for us to understand the pay gap better. I think we know women are earning less, and we're seeing some of the drivers of that in terms of time spent with patients. I think advocating for reimbursements to be based on the amount of time you spend with the patient rather than other factors could really help women increase their pay gap. I'm a big fan of political advocacy for healthcare, and I think this is just another avenue for us to pursue, because a lot of our pay is coming from CMS. So saying, listen, this is what's happening with women, not just in urology, across the board in medicine. How can we make this more equitable? how can we reimburse for emotional support, which is not the same as counseling, right? I mean, it's a little different. How do we reimburse for all of this so that women are being paid fairly? I think we need to provide resources to women to advocate for themselves, and provide opportunities for women in urology if they want to be practice owners or partners. How do we help them find those types of practices and make sure that they're not being taken advantage of? You know, it's not uncommon for a young urologist to join a group with an understanding that they're on a partnership track. We want to make sure that women aren't being denied partnership when they reach those junctures in their careers. I think mentoring is hugely important, making sure that we have adequate mentoring. And mentoring doesn't have to be a more senior female. Some of my best mentors have been men in my career. So, you know, but mentoring women to make sure that they're getting promoted appropriately. You know, we had a paper recently on academic promotion that showed women are not getting promoted as quickly as men. That contributes to the pay gap also. You know, at many institutions, your academic rank translates into your salary. So, you know, there's a lot of room for us, for the AUA as an organization, for us as individual urologists to support each other and make sure that we bridge this pay gap over time.
And do you and your co-authors plan to conduct any additional research on this topic? And if so, you know, what will it focus on specifically?
So there are a lot of avenues that we would like to continue to pursue. I think looking within the individual specialties that are very female heavy to see if the pay gap is existing. For example, we know that women are more likely to be in female pelvic medicine. Is the pay gap in that specialty as significant as the pay gap overall? Or do people in female pelvic medicine just make less, but it's equal? We don't know that. There has been a study looking in pediatrics, which is another very female focused specialty in urology, that showed that women pediatric urologists were had fewer work RVUs than their male counterparts. So there is a little bit of a salary gap there, but again, this was done many years ago, looking at what's happening now as more and more women are going into urology. The other thing I think that we're really interested in focusing on is the role of mentorship. So are residency candidates more likely to choose programs that have women on faculty? What's the role of mentorship in terms of making sure that women are achieving their full potential? I think the other area that I'm really interested in right now is the impact of COVID-19 on the ability of women to practice in medicine. So this has come up at my own institution where some non-urologists who are mothers have been talking about their inability to continue to work full time if children don't go back to school full time in the fall. And how are we as a medical community, again, not just in urology, going to address the huge care gap for children if they're not in school? And while I'm certainly very understanding of the concerns teachers have about going back, I'm equally concerned as a practicing urologist and a mother, what am I going to do with my children when they're not back in school and I'm working, you know, 50, 60 hours a week in my academic practice? So I think understanding the impact of e-learning, distance learning on our families where we have medical professionals at home, how is that going to change the practice of medicine in general? And it's something that, you know, my department has been looking at, and I know my institution has been also, but I think we really need to understand it on a more national level.
Be sure to subscribe to Speaking of Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. And you can get the latest in urology news, practice management advice, and health policy updates by visiting www.urologytimes.com. Thank you for listening.